Hello, welcome to Poet Runner, the show where we talk about poetry and running. Today we have Mr. Carl, the poet, the running poet, because I really can't pronounce his last name and I don't want to destroy it. And I also have my co-host, Richard Modiano. After Carl, we'll be interviewing Tim Green, current editor and publisher of Rattle. How you doing, Carl?
Good, and I appreciate the opportunity. Nice to meet a fellow runner and writer, and thank you for having me on.
So you said you only do 5Ks. Have you done marathons before, or have you strictly stuck to the smaller runs?
I've been doing 5Ks. I'm 68, so I would say I've been doing 5Ks for about 45 years now. I did 3 half marathons. In the year 2000, I did the Disney half marathon just for the year 2000, something special. I'm just not a lover of distance running. It just takes more training and it's far. I like a 5K because it challenges you. You still run pretty fast, but 30 minutes or less, you're over and you're home on a Saturday and you can continue on with your day. So,
well, it's definitely
a challenge because if you run fast, the 5K is not that easy. I mean, at 3 miles, if you're running fast, is a challenge.
Well, what's your best time?
Back in the day, it was under 20, about 19 minutes. Now, close to 30. Again, but for my age group, I would say 95% of the time, I usually finish first or second in my age group. Low 29s.
How do you train for your 5Ks? I mean, because I know marathon training and ultra training, they're different animals.
Okay. I'm almost taking the philosophy. There was a 100-year-old lady, Hurricane, I can't remember her last name, but I watched a YouTube video and she set the record for the 100 meters. And they asked her the same question and she said, "I don't train. I'm saving myself for the races." I thought that was great. I'm not doing that. I am training, but not like I used to. I mean, I'm basically, I lift weights and then I'll go on the treadmill and just run 3 miles at I'll put it on a 6, which is about a little over 8-minute pace. If I'm running with a friend outside, I'm running maybe 9, 9.5-minute paces. I run about 12 to 15 miles a week. And the only reason I brought her up is I've just gotten off of 2 injuries. I had a knee problem that's been bothering me for almost 2 months. It was kind of scary. It finally went away. I didn't go to the doctor or anything. And then 2 weeks later, my Achilles started hurting me.
That's got to suck.
So I'm almost going to take her philosophy because I love racing. So I might cut back a little bit on training. In the old days, I used to do tempo runs and I used to do speed work. But at my age, it's just I just don't have it to do anymore.
I think if you're still doing it, you're doing good. If you're still doing it, you're doing good.
Well, that's how I tell my friend. I said, if you wake up at 7 or 5 o'clock on a Saturday, you're ahead of 80% of the people in America. You drive to the race, you're in a race, that's better than another 10, 15%. If you run it and complete it, you're at the top. So that's what I look at. That's my philosophy. I wake up, I get there, I show up, and I run it. And I thank God for every step. I really mean that.
Same here. That's the way I feel about marathons. When I get the beginning of the marathon, I'm not sure if I'm going to finish, but I always finish. But at the same time, I still have that doubt. And I think having that doubt's good.
Yes. Well, my doubts are injuries. I haven't had a lot, but I know there's going to be a point where I can't run anymore. Hopefully that never happens, but if it does, then I'll walk race. And then if I can't do that anymore, I'll cane walk race. And then I'll crawl, but I'm going to do it as long as I possibly can, no matter what fate my legs are in. But,
well, as long as you got a plan, that's all that matters.
Yes.
I'm inspired
by older runners. I go to 5Ks, and sometimes I'll see a 7-year-old run a 27, 26-minute, and I go, oh, my God, I got to talk to that guy about his training or about how he did that. But it's inspiring when you see older people out there, whether it's male or female, still competing and running pretty decent times.
I've seen that. I've actually seen people older than me. I mean, older, like out distancing me and running faster in marathons. And I'm like, oh, man, I feel bad. But, you know, they've probably been
well,
doing it for a while.
Well, you're only against yourself. That's the beauty of running. You're against your last time. That's how I look at it.
Well, actually, you know, that took me a while to get there, you know, because when I was running outside just, you know, just to run, I'd always, like, see people passing me, and I always overthought about it. And then I realized, like, I just got to do my own run and not worry about everybody else running around me. And I like what you said about that woman. You know, I don't train. I just run. And when I run, when I do the races, that's when I run. I'm kind of the same way now.
Well,
that
if you're younger, may not work as well because you do have to train. But I'm saying as you get older, that's a great philosophy. You know, in other words, I don't want to get injured training. I want to be able to race every couple weeks or so, and that's what I do. I do at least two races a month, but I live in Florida, so when the summer comes, then I just do one a month because it's so hot. But I average about 20 to 22 5Ks a year racing. And where I live, I do a lot. They have them on the beach, which is awesome. You do a race, and then you can jump in the ocean while you're waiting for the award ceremony. Yeah, I run in my bathing suit just so I can do that. So that's nice to be able to be close to the ocean, which I love.
I've actually had, I think, the Surf City Marathon was near the ocean. The Orange County Marathon was near the ocean, and those were nice runs. And when I was training, I'd run up the Pacific Coast Highway near Malibu. Those are really nice runs where you get to see the ocean. I like those runs.
Well, the ones here, I live in New Smyrna Beach, and then I go to Daytona Beach. They are on the beach, so you're running on the hard packed sand. So you're right by the ocean. You're there.
Ooh, how is it running on sand? I haven't done that yet.
In Florida, we have hard packed sand because cars are allowed on the beach in New Smyrna Beach and Daytona and Ormond Beach. So, but when you start, they have you're on the soft sand for maybe 30, 40, 50 feet, and then you angle over to the hard sand by the water. So I got to remember because I actually hurt my Achilles doing that, or was my knee, I'm sorry, just running fast at the end in the last 20 yards was in the soft sand, you know, I had to angle up to the finish line. So now I just kind of slow down. But, no, it's hard sand, so it's almost like running on macadam, basically.
Oh, nice. So when did you start running? I mean, when did you first pick up running?
I started running after I graduated college. I had a friend. I lived in Rahway, New Jersey. His name was Robert. And we used to drink and do all kinds of bad things with our body back then, partying. And I don't know, one day he said, let's just go to the park and run. I go, what? I said, okay, I'll meet you on a Saturday. He said, well, in New Jersey, they have these Sabrette hot dog wagons. He says, we'll run, and that's our motivation. And we'll stop at the hot dog cart and get a hot dog. I said, okay. So I can't remember. I think the park was about 2 miles around or maybe even three. And they actually had a track on the interior as well. So we'd run 5-10 minutes. I'm huffing and puffing. I actually smoked cigarettes back then too. And just kept doing it. Eventually we made it around the park, and then we made it around the park and then went in on the track. So it started slowly like that, and I kept running since then. But I ran maybe 10 years without ever winning races. And in my 30s and up to maybe early 40s, I never really won an award. I was always like fourth, fifth, sixth place. Then as I got older, I started winning my races, you know, for my age group. And then since I've been about mid-50s in that age group, I consistently place first, second, or third. I'd say first at least 60-70% of the time. So I know it's just a little medal, doesn't mean too much, but it is kind of a little motivating thing just to be there.
I don't know. Anytime you can place in your age group, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, I almost placed in my age group in a half marathon, but I missed it by like about.
But I'll,
but
if I could tell
something.
You about my favorite run that's always sticks out in my mind many, many years ago. I used to live in New Jersey by the beach as well, again, maybe 3 miles from the ocean. And New Jersey has a boardwalk, you know, with all the amusements and everything. But in the wintertime, everything's boarded up. There's snow, believe it or not, on the sand of the ocean. And I used to love driving my car 3 miles to that boardwalk and running on it in the wintertime. There's nobody there. Everything was shut down. And just that was like my favorite place. And it's a soft place to run. You're running on wood planks.
Nice.
But sometimes when I run, I just put that in my mind again. It was just such a peaceful, zen kind of feeling doing that run.
Sounds it. That's the whole thing about running for me. It's very zen. It's very calming. It relaxes me. I mean, that's what I enjoy about running. That's why I run every day. It's just, it relaxes me. It calms me down before the day starts.
Me too. My friends think I'm crazy, but I go, no, it's two things you can do. I could either think about things, or I could just shut my mind down completely, and I like either one.
They both work.
Yep.
And let's see, we should talk a little about your poetry. Do you have anything you want to read to show us what you've written, or, you know, because you're one of the few poet runners I have, actual runner and poet.
Yes. As far as my poetry, I've been writing poetry. I'll just give you a little background real quick. Writing poetry for about 8 years. It started accidentally. I mean, I never wrote anything in my life, but I will say one thing that prepared me. I'm a voracious reader. Since I've been 8, 9 years old, I'm always reading books constantly. I can't remember a day for at least 30, 40 minutes I haven't read something, whether it's a magazine, a novel, short stories, whatever. So I think being a reader, you know, continually reading helps you become a writer. So I just started writing poetry, got published, continued from there. I've come out with 3 different poetry books. And then I grew my poetry into short stories. I had a lot of those published. And then also I wrote a play that was recently published and performed in Romania, of all places, by by a friend I met on Facebook, surprised me with, hey, we had our high school class put on your play for you, which really surprised me. And then also now I'm doing photography, and I've had a lot of my photography published. I've been in 2 art galleries of my photography, and then I've also grown into paintography. I used to paint in college, so now I started painting. But what I'm doing is I'm combining my painting with photography. So I'll take one of my paintings, and then I'll overlay a photo over it. And I just said, I'll call it paintography. I thought I invented a new word, and I looked it up on Google, and of course some people are doing it. It is a word. But and then just real quick, I have a lot of friends on Facebook, and I've had a lot of international poet writers comment on my photography, say, your photography inspired me. I wrote a poem for your photo. So I'm like really touched by that. It's really nice that somebody would do that. And I said, you know what? I will get us published. So I will submit, it's called a Krastic Art. I'll submit my photo and your writing, and we'll both get a publishing credit. And a lot of the ladies who did that were never published before, so I was happy to help them out that way. And then a lot of people on Facebook, writers, have seen my photography and asked me if they can use it for the cover of their book. How much do you charge? And I said, I don't charge anything. I'd be so honored. So I've had 6 different writers, and I've had one lady in the Philippines, Liz Lumindo Gabato Rivera. She's done 7 books with my photography on her cover.
Nice.
So that's just kind of a little background. But I could read poem.
Cool.
My latest book is out on Amazon. It's called Playground of Destiny. And what I like about this book is it has poetry, photography, has a couple of my paintings, it has my play, and it has short stories. So it kind of gives everything that I've been doing so far. So this poem was also made into a video poem. I have a nice friend out in California who does videos for my poems. She does an awesome job. She'll actually make a video and read my poetry. So this one is called Pathway Exploration, and she did, and obviously she's a better reader than I am. I don't feel I'm a great reader of poetry, but the poem is Pathway Exploration. I explore this path meandering, barefoot in childhood, with innocence and a new confidence. anticipating what lies beyond the touring hills and the soil opulent with hope, emancipated hearts of deep canyons, embracing errant dreams, every newborn breeze from somewhere. The path is intimate. It turns and crevices beckon towards humble oaks and rocky cliffs. Dormant meadows provoke in the late summer's sun cooled in twilight. Stars impregnate the semi-darkness, enlightening the way to middle life. Do I know this path? Should I speak to the people? Wandering past acknowledgments, most do not see the great loads they carry. They do not hear as we share our burdens burned in sunsets. The path is aged and wear. We will not need much when we reach the end. So that's pathway exploration.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good.
So do you read out loud or you just seek to get published? Do you do any live readings or anything like that?
I recently moved to New Smyrna Beach. I was living in a town called Mount Dora, and I did a lot of readings there. There was a poet laureate in Lake County, Florida, who invited me to readings. And then I found this art gallery in Leesburg, Florida, that had this monthly open mic, which was anything you wanted to do. You wanted to do poetry, sing, comedy, and I loved it. I got kind of addicted to it. So I did about 8 or 10 in a row. But since I've come to New Smyrna with COVID and all that, that kind of kibosh on it, I did one open mic here. So I do like them if they have them. I'm doing a lot online. I'm getting a lot of interviews where I'm being interviewed and I'm interviewing people as well. So I like doing that. So really my goal right now is to see where photography and art's going to take me. And I love helping other people. So I'm an administrator on a new Facebook group and putting that together. I do interviews for ILA magazine. And actually, I'm doing an interview with someone who just completed their first Ironman, a young girl, for Runner's Gazette, which is the oldest running magazine. I've done a few of their interviews for them. I don't know if you saw the previous ones. But So I like doing interviews, whether it's live. I actually prefer email. That's easier. I just email them the questions and let them type it up instead of me, you know, on a mic with them and typing everything or doing it on Zoom. So I always tell them that. And I've reached out to a couple famous runners. I just can't seem to get them because I'm trying. I tried Karen Goucher a few times. I'm going to try her again. And just, you know, and a couple of the elite runners, I mean – so we'll see what happens, but I like doing collaborations. I like helping out people who need help with books. I've helped a couple female writers read their book for them, help them out, get it published, give them ideas. So I'm almost, you know, as you get older and you've done all this, it's like, let me help other people. Let me help them reach their goals. That's where I am right now. I don't think I'm going to do another book as far as writing. I've done that already. So, but I still write and I still send out to get published. And as I told you before the interview started, the New Yorker, the Atlantic, New York Review of Books, that's still my goal to get in there. And the Poetry Magazine, just a top tier magazine. I think that would be great.
Well, you got to have goals. We're running out of time. Is there anything you want to promote, anything you want to say before we finish our interview?
Sure. I'll just say my book is out, Playground of Destiny. It's on Amazon. It is a magazine-sized book. It's $9.99. However, my profit is $2, and I'm donating it to the Inspired Charity Fund, which is my publisher, because I'm kind of a weird artist. I don't like getting paid for anything. I make my money doing day trading and stocks, even though I'm losing money right now, but it's doing pretty good. So somebody ever wants to pay me something, I say, no, give it to charity. I don't need, you know, your $10 payment or whatever. So I believe art should be free, but that's just me.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for coming on.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it. Stay running, and we'll stay in touch now.
All right. Take care.
And thanks, Richard, as well.
You're welcome, Carl.
All right. Have a good evening, guys.
You too.
You too. Bye. And now we have coming on Tim Green, longtime editor right now of Rattle. I believe you've been doing it since 2004.
I have, yeah. It's been a long time.
Yeah, that's almost 20 years. That's a
long
run.
It is. I never thought I'd be here this long, that's for sure.
Do you enjoy it? I mean, because, you know, publishing people sometimes, you know, it gets a little hard sometimes when people get upset when you don't publish them.
Yeah, I mean, there's downsides, but it's a great job. I mean, you know, you get to do so many different things. It's, you know, web design and advertising and choosing poems and layouts and, you know, doing events and podcasts. And there's just a lot of fun stuff to do. And you kind of never get bored, which is what, you know, other jobs I had, I get bored. So that's why I like this one.
No, you're a great promoter because, I mean, I get your emails for events coming up all the time. I just got a job and I can't make them, but you're great at promoting. I noticed that.
Well, thanks. And thanks for having me on the show, by the way.
Well, you've definitely earned a spot because you've been at this, you know, publishing people for a good long time. And I respect that because it's a lot of work doing anything with poetry when you're handling poems, looking at them, judging them and deciding what goes in and then having to reject them and then having to write a letter where you're saying, well, it didn't quite make it.
Yeah, it's the worst part of the job for sure, sending those. You know, you send a batch of 500 at a time every week or so. And, you know, it's a lot of, you know, unhappiness to spread around. You have to kind of make penance for that.
I could see that. What made you want to become, you know, the main guy at Rattle? I mean, how did it come about? How did you replace, I think it was Stella Sue?
Yeah, it was Stella Sue Lee. Actually, I was a molecular biology major in college. And I worked in an mRNA lab studying the conformational binding structures of mRNA. And it was boring work doing lab work. I always thought, you know, I love science. I always thought that that's what I would want to do. And when I actually started working in science, it was just so tedious, you know, and narrowly focused. And I didn't want to teach, so I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I kind of had an existential crisis. And I was trying to decide what I would do with my life. And I was thinking about like law school or med school or something, but I was writing too. I always thought maybe I'd write some science fiction novels. So I always loved writing and I liked writing poetry too. I took a class at the University of Rochester with James Longenbach, and that was just an elective at the time. And I just fell in love with it. I loved that mystery that a poem creates, that magical space. It's hard to find at other places. It's like, it's religious almost, but you don't have to believe in a religion to feel it. So I always loved that, and I was writing poems and working an overnight shift at a group home for mentally ill adults in Rochester, New York. And I submitted to Rattle and just started sort of chatting with Stella Sue over email. It was email submissions back then. And she asked eventually, and we kind of went back and forth chatting, and then a couple of weeks later she emailed me or called me to say she took a poem. And then we were just chatting again, and I mentioned since I was working a lot of overnight shifts at this group home, I was thinking about getting a part-time job somewhere else, like just so I could be in public and have a little bit of a broader experience with things. And she asked if I wanted to start working for her. And I said, sure. And I didn't know. She gave me some tasks, and she was just kind of testing me out because she was thinking about asking if I'd want to take over full-time. And it was a strange, you know, strange thing. I didn't think it's not somewhere I thought I'd end up. But they asked me out, and I did a job interview. And they hired me. And so I've been doing it ever since. I thought maybe I'd just be doing it for a little while and seeing what Los Angeles was like and having an interesting experience and then go to grad school or law school or whatever I figured out after figuring it out. But I just turned out I really like the job. It's a lot of fun. You know, and I'm kind of my own boss work. You know, I just have to make my own tasks up. I don't even have anybody ask me to do things. I just do as much as I can, given that I have a full-time job doing it. And I love that aspect of it. So I've just had a lot of fun with it. I've always enjoyed it. And we built up Rattle into a pretty big thing. So it's a good thing. You know, I'm happy to be here.
So basically, Rattle's your main gig?
Yeah, it's a full-time. I work like 60 hours a week. It's done out of my house. You know, it's right next to my office, right next to the kitchen. And we have, my wife works a little bit part-time, and that's it. And so so I just work and work and work, but I don't have to drive anywhere. I don't have to go to many boring meetings or anything like that. So I can be productive and just focus on, you know, sharing poetry as widely and as well as I can.
That's kind of like that's a nice gig. I mean, not many people can say that they've turned poetry into their main thing, or it actually provides them a living.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. I feel very lucky for it.
Richard Modiano here.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Richard. I didn't know you're here. Good to hear you.
Yeah. So, with all of the editing and managing Rattle, when do you fit in your own work?
Well, one of the things we do now, we have the, I don't know if you've seen it, we have the Rattlecast, which I've been doing for, I don't know if it's almost 3 years now. We're up to 150 episodes. But it's a once-a-week show. I interview a poet and do kind of like what you guys are doing, and they read some poems and we talk, and then there's an open mic after. We also have the news poems on there too, so we have a couple guests every week. And one of the things we do is have an open mic, and there's a prompt at the end of every episode. So I write a poem for the prompt, and that's pretty much all I do these days. Usually Sunday morning before the show, I wake up a little early and write something because, you know, I put it off until Sunday. And then, so I write about one poem a week. That's about how it goes lately.
Still, that's good. One poem a week.
Yeah, I'll take it. You know, it adds up. After a year, you got a book, you know, if they were all good. That's the problem, I guess.
Sounds great.
Let me ask, what do you look for when people submit poetry to you?
Well, this is something I've thought about a lot over the years, of course. And it feels like what we're really looking for, and I think what people are really drawn to, is honesty, like some kind of deep authenticity that's not superficial and not something that's like pre-recorded and regurgitated. And, you know, so telling stories and trying to find the actual truth of the story is what a good poem does. And that's what I feel like I'm listening for when I'm reading through submissions. It almost feels like I'm, you know, you flip through poems pretty quick because we get, I think, about 300 poems a day, maybe 250 poems a day.
Wow.
And so, you know, you read through them pretty quick and then put the ones that have something going in one pile to read again later and, you know, and pass on the ones that aren't. But it feels like you're just listening to, you know, like an old-fashioned radio dial, and you're like, you know, flipping through the dial, and it's like static, and then there's a station. It's like, bam. And what it is really some kind of honest, like deep voice that's telling some kind of truth. And you can just hear it. There's kind of a music to it that's special and different than regular speech. And I don't know, it just stands out. It's a weird thing. So that's what you're looking for, is just that sort of inner hum, that rattle, if you will, inside that the good poem makes. And I always, too, I think that you could just, you know, that Clockwork Orange scene at the end, where, like, the eyes glued open. You could poems in front of people. Like, you could pick anybody and just put poems in front of people over and over again, one poem after the other, and just measure their, you know, their skin sweat response and figure out which one's the poem to publish, because a good poem gives you like that physical reaction, like everything kind of hums and connects, and it has to do with like a coherence and understanding, some kind of deep spiritual things going on. But you just feel it. So you just kind of read poems and wait till you hear music and feel some kind of feeling, and then that's what we publish.
Nice.
That's a good criteria, I think.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it otherwise. Like as far as craft goes, I mean, it doesn't really matter as long as the poem's, you know, if the poem's not working on that level, then who cares? That's kind of my opinion about it.
So how many people do you have, a group of people that pick the poems together, or is it just one person picking the poems?
So either myself or my wife Megan read all the submissions once. Then it depends what category we're doing, because we do a lot of different things. We have Poet Respond, which is poems about current events that we publish a couple times a week online. And I'm the one who just reads those because there's sort of not enough time. You just have to make a quick decision and say, hey, this is one we want to publish. And then there's the Ekphrastic Challenge that we do once a month, where we put up an artwork, a piece of visual art, and about 500 poets every month write a poem about it. And then we pick those. So one of us, either me or Megan, will sort of make a, you know, cut down to, you know, about 25 or 50 poets. And then we send those to the artist. The artist gets to pick one too, which is always interesting. And then whoever didn't read picks one as well. So we have an editor's choice and an artist's choice. And then for the issue itself, either me or Megan will read the first read. Then whoever read, you know, reads second will read another read. We'll narrow it down, and then we'll take it to Alan Fox, who's the founder of Rattle, and I should have mentioned by now, but he's the founder of Rattle and board president. And so we have a meeting with him, like a three, you know, an editorial meeting, and decide. So he's like this. So, you know, we come to him with like 50 poems, and we narrow it down to 25 every meeting or whatever. And so that's how we work. So it's a kind of a process of like slowly narrowing down, and different, you know, each of those three people will read at different phases.
Nice.
Yeah, well, I think that's interesting. It's interesting for people to hear the editorial process described in such detail, Tim. I think that's
I think I can add is that Alan Fox, who's the founder of Rattle, he founded it back in 1995 out of a workshop. It was a class chapbook in his workshop down in L.A. with Jack Grapes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Alan, he was he owned a real estate company. He was a lawyer. And when he was in his late 50s, I think, he met James Ragan, the poet at USC, on a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan had always loved poetry, and James convinced him to get an MFA from USC. And so he did that and really loved it. It was just a fun experience. So after he was done with that, he wanted to keep going, and someone recommended Jack Grapes. So he went to Jack Grapes. At the end of that class, they made this chapbook, and that became Rattle. But the thing about Alan is that he doesn't do poetry anywhere else. He likes poetry at our editorial meetings, and he reads some of the issues, and he interviews some poets. But he's very like a layman because he's an interesting person with a lot of different interests and things going on. And so having a poem, there's this weird thing where if you're an editor, you're sort of drawn to the strange and the unusual because you see so much.
Yeah.
And he kind of keeps us, because the audience we're looking at is an audience of like regular people, not poetry academics or editors that read, 200,000 poems a year. And so he keeps us kind of balanced. And if it's, there's a lot of times where I'll love something because it's strange, and he'll be like, yeah, it's just not working for me. And so he's kind of our ideal reader, in that he's a part-time poetry fan, you know, and I think that's a really important component of it too.
I think it is too. I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, I think it was in the late 80s that the Can Poetry Matter essay appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the points that was made was the only audience for poetry is other poets because it's become so detached from real life.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's what
Rattle was founded for, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a way of bringing it back into real life. I mean, it's good to have a consultant like that, I think. Because
yeah,
otherwise,
at this point,
you can slip into a vacuum, a sort of a bubble, a poetry bubble, where all of your references are to other poems or other poets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so even if I'm reading, like for the Poets Respond about current events, it's just me picking, but I still keep that in mind. You know, I still have, after 20 years, I have Alan's voice and opinion as sort of a module in my own brain, so I know what he would think too. And so I'm always sort of, you know, I'm aiming for poets that matter to people, or poems that matter to people, you know? And so,
yeah.
And then I'm also monitoring, you know, thanks, you know, social media is a really great tool because you can see in real time what's working and what's not. And over the years, you kind of see what resonates with others and what doesn't. So that's another aspect of it, too.
Yeah, I think that's this is a sort of a for people hearing this is a sort of a revelation as to why Rattle is such a good journal, because it has this sensibility working for it.
Yeah, thanks. That's what we're always trying to do. And that's the thing. I mean, Alan was, he came back to poetry. He loved, you know, like Rilke and like Neruda and stuff back in like when he was younger, and then didn't really follow poetry at all. And he came back in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was like the language school period, and all the literary magazines were publishing this, you know, abstract, strange stuff that he couldn't relate to at all. And so when they started doing this class chef book, you know, Bomb Shelter Press turned that into a magazine, which was Rattle. Alan thought, you know what, we'll make a magazine, a poetry magazine for everybody who's not, you know, without a PhD. You don't need a PhD to read it.
Yeah.
So that was always his mission. And the reason why I got the job in the first place was I was saying the same kind of things. You know, when I was talking to Stella Sue, I was sort of, you know, making that same case. Because I wasn't a, you know, I wasn't the kind of person who always wanted to be an English major and wanted to be a professor and live that kind of lifestyle. I was just somebody who, one of the things I liked was poetry. And the obscure, esoteric kind of stuff didn't really appeal to me. And so I said, you know, this is why I love Rattle. I love what you do. And I was sort of articulating what they were trying to do as a, you know, I was 22 years old at the time or whatever. And that's why they hired me too, because we have the same kind of vision and mindset. So my job is to carry that along, and hopefully I'm doing a good job. I'm trying.
I think you are. I mean, it's a lively journal. Many poetry journals that I've read, they're kind of predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And Rattle is unpredictable. That's what I like about it. There's going
I love to hear you say that. Yeah.
There's going to be something new and fresh that turns up.
Yeah, that's exactly what my goal is, to have you know, every page be a surprise. Like, you turn the page and it's something totally different. That's what I want.
Well, I think you've achieved that, Tim.
Great. That's great to hear.
So what is in store for the future of Rattle? What is coming up?
Well, we have one of the reasons why when Raphael asked if I'd be on the show, I was really happy, because we have a literary festival, or an arts and wine festival, that's coming up. It's the Wrightwood Arts and Wine Festival. And for about 5 years before the pandemic, we had a Wrightwood Literary Festival, which was just wonderful. It was in a camp, Camp Maria Stella in Wrightwood. Which is sort of by Big Bear, but the next mountain over, closer to L.A. And so we'd reserve this camp, and we'd have about 100 people come, and there'd be maybe a dozen or 10 workshops. And so there'd be poetry workshops and readings and a slam at night. And we had a great time, but then they sold the camp, and then the pandemic came. And so we teamed up with the Wrightwood Art Center to make this Arts and Wine Festival. So instead of just literature, it's art, wine, and poetry. And so we have... This is a Saturday, May 21st, and we have, and if you've ever been in Wrightwood, it's a beautiful little town. There's like a little downtown village part. We have the two streets blocked off. There's about 30-plus artists, visual artists, painters, and sculptors and things with booths and stuff. It's a juried art show. Then we have workshops with Nikhil Davis and Alejandro Escudé, and then Taylor Molly is doing a slam poetry workshop, and then we'll feature at the slam that night. So it's sort of a day of literature and wine and poetry. It's going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully, you know, some people might want to come up. It's about, you know, about a 90-minute drive from L.A., and it's going to be a really fun day.
That sounds terrific.
Fun. That sounds great.
Yeah, and then other than that, I mean, we have the regular production cycle. You know, quarterly the magazine comes out. We have the chapbook prize. So every issue comes with a chapbook now. And this summer, the chapbook in the summer is always the Rattle Young Poets Anthology. So it's an anthology of poets age 15 and younger, which we've been doing for, I think this is the ninth one of them. But they're just amazing, because, you know, you talk about that sort of deep, magical resonance. Kids have it. You know, they haven't learned yet how to be cliche. Like, they're just so – it's just fun what comes out of them, you know. And they have so much more insight than you'd expect. You can really learn a lot. So the idea of the Young Poets Anthology is that you know, we can learn from kids, and we can understand a little bit more of their perspective too. And so it's an anthology of, you know, by kids written for adults. And so we include that with the summer issue too. So we have that coming up. Then the Rattle Poetry Prize, the deadline's July 15th, which is, you know, $15,000 for a single poem, which is a good chunk of change.
Yeah.
So that's kind of their subscription drive too, because it's the entry fees at subscription for a year for $25, so it both funds the prize and generates subscriptions, which is a big thing. We want readers, you know.
Oh yeah, and that sounds like a good way to get readers too, and get people involved in the magazine.
Yeah, I think of it all as there's kind of this whole like machine that you sort of build over the years, where different parts work together And that's one of the main ones, because it's a really good, and half of our funding comes in through that. So so it's a really important thing we do every year. We get several thousand entries, several thousand new subscribers too. And we're up to about 9,000 subscribers a year. And it funds a lot of stuff. That's why we can do, you know, submissions are always free other than that contest. And we pay for everything we publish. It all comes out of the subscriptions. So and half the subscriptions come from that contest. So it's all stuff that's working together.
Nice. Definitely sounds like everything's working well, and you actually have – actually, I like the way it's all put together, that you have goals, plans, and everything is working to get somewhere. And a lot of people are not that organized, and actually appreciate the way you went about – you go about doing your business.
I am scientifically trained, you know, so I think of it as like a big biological system almost, you know. Like there's a limiting factor of certain – processes, and they all have to come together at the right time. You know, it's like a big chemical reaction.
Sounds great. Yeah. I'm really impressed by the way that, you know, you've been doing it since 2004, and doing anything that long is impressive. And being consistent, you know, that takes a lot.
Yeah, and it's fun too. The other thing is that you get bored a little bit, and so you try new things all the time. So that's the other thing I like. Like, I never thought, you know, in school when I was a kid, reading out loud was like my least favorite. Like in English class, you know, they'd make you read a couple pages of the novel you're reading or whatever.
Yeah.
And I hated that. And I hated English. It was my worst subject in school by far. And so, and I'm not a great public speaker. I mean, I mumble and talk fast and, you know, I'm not good at this. But I end up being a podcast host. And I'm reading poems live on a broadcast every week and interviewing people constantly. It's stuff that I never thought I would do in life, and it's just fun new challenges that you throw at yourself over the years. That sort of keeps it fresh, too, for me personally.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't think I'd be doing this and doing a lot of other things, but it's the interest in poetry that makes me do these things and, you know, keep going. And I'm definitely, you know, if I didn't have this, I'd probably be doing something else, but I'd like being creative.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great space to be creative. That's the nice thing about it.
Oh, yeah. Also, we're running out of time, but anything else you want to pitch before we close out?
No, that's about it, but it is, if anybody wants to come out, the Slam's going to be a lot of fun. That's Saturday, May 21st. Taylor Molly's going to read a set in between. There's going to be about... We're looking for, hopefully, I have like 20 people maybe sign up to perform in the Slam. First prize, $500.
Nice.
And Taylor's doing a workshop beforehand, so you can do like a two-hour class in like honing your craft and performing, and then later that night put it to the test in the Slam. So we're hoping, we had a Slam with the literary festival that we did, and the town, the people in Wrightwood, the non-poets, just loved it. I mean, it was, and so, you know, all the time people would say, hey, when are you doing a Slam again, you know, and we'd only do it once a year. So it's going to be a lot of fun bringing it back, and all the, you know, the people in town are coming out. Wrightwood's got about 5,000 people, and
nice.
We're hopefully going to have a full house, and hopefully have enough people performing too that it's a good set. But if not, you know, the odds of entering will and winning will be even higher. So so anybody can check that out at wrightwoodarts.com, Wrightwood, and it's WRIGHT, woodarts.com. That's where all the festival stuff is. So do check that out, and hope somebody can come up.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, great conversation, Tim.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime. Happy to do it.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, take care.
And now we have Richard to tell us some books he's read. Tell us a little bit about which book are you reviewing.
I'm going to be reviewing The Stand Poems, Indictments and Amendments by Linda Ravenswood. This is, Stan was Linda's creative partner, and he passed, and this book is a response to the impact that he had on her, the absence that she felt with his departure. And it's really very frank, very open, and very moving. And sooner or later we are all going to experience grief. And this is the poems in this book are about engaging with grief and coming out the other side. I mean, there is pain, but there is also closure. There is a sense of taking inspiration from this relationship, and there's also a fine appreciation of what it means to be with somebody, to have a deep and intertwined relationship with someone, somebody that has meant so much to you and who leaves. This is a wonderful way of engaging with that loss. And I'm going to pick out a couple of poems. I'm going to pick out, let me see. Well, just to set the stage, here is the first poem in the book, or actually the second poem. It's called The Stand Poems, 0 Days Gone. When I left the house, I didn't know you were gone. I saw Sonny's eyes, but was hurrying to class across the city. I didn't check to see if you were dead on the floor. It didn't occur to me, though there was a wildness that morning beyond the usual hurry out the house dread. But that was every moment of you, that feeling you were slipping away. I don't know if I will ever understand. This is the stand poem, 0 days away, because you just become finished, still on the floor. You were just a way place, and you're just a way place. What I'm saying doesn't make sense because of you, on the floor forever. This is the last poem I scribbled before I knew you were gone. Day zero. I close my eyes and let the Uber driver take me. When you're there, you can get more places with a little money. You can make more money. In the desert, there are many bones. If you found them, you could weave a raft of bones, but still you wouldn't know the story. Though the wind would seem a true something in the west. Sing into some bone along the joint boat, where it touches wind when wind touches it, tissue paper and comb the wind. Maybe the sound of braided bones will tell the story that could reach you. Will you be reached where you are in the city? Maybe the sound of spoon on china dish will reach you, remind you. An Uber driver is a kind of coyote. He might even be working for the man. If he's a Buffalo Bill, he might even be dangerous, but I don't expect this. In the city, I expect coyote, such as he is, to be solid and safe. We would continue this soon. So that's one example of what you will find in this book. There's also, Linda has a tremendous range as a poet, too, in terms of the way she puts words down on paper. I'm going to read this one called The Stand Poems, 47 Days Gone. Gen X Suite. We are Gen X. We never get old. I mean, we get old, but we never crack like the rest. We're Gen X. We look younger than millennials. Sorry, millennials. Why don't you plug in your car and cry? It'll just be a second till both your parents, still married, come help. We're Gen X. We love those rockers on MTV so much that we got with them, followed them, tried to be like them, married them, took them from their sad Reseda houses and injected them with new energy, vitality, hope. We're Gen X. We breed false hope. We're Gen X. We have no money, but our dicks still work. We Gen X, they could smell it on us. All earlier rockers smelled it, wanted to get with us. The minute I saw you, I knew I wanted to have a baby with you. We're Gen X. You see your unborn children in our eyes. We Gen X. We common law married old rockers, trust funders, and bartenders, married their big hair and big dreams, big stores of Oregon and the Bend and the Snake River. We married you, white boy, married you, rat, poison, Cinderella, married you, TJ Hooker, married you, Two Live Crew. You loved us, but you could never be us. Like the elders love the beats. But we destined for the GM factory floor. You wanted us, Gen X. Man, did you want us. Saw Kurt Cobain magic on us. knew what Seattle and Aberdeen, knew everything we know. But you, not Gen X. We, Gen X, see, you know we loved you, praised you, stayed with you. You could never be us, could never know the loneliness, that particular turn-of-the-century loneliness, that latchkey kid show, that eye drop, teardrop, sugar drop. We were raised by Skittles. We are Gen X, and now we are alone, nodding to each other at the farmer's market, the Grove, the Americana. What is Los Angeles? L.A. come Disneyland. Now L.A. is Disney covered. We look, we nod, we make our hand thump, we do joint break, we drop low, we look 30-ish, but really so much older. Epilogue. Goodbye, Tom Petty. We hardly knew you. Goodbye to all your heartbreak, too. Goodbye, Tom Petty, and all the guys who look like you. Goodbye to you and all the boys who look like you. So those are some of the poems in the Stan poems, Indictments and Amendments. It's published by Pedestrian Press. Order from the publisher if you can, or go to your independent bookstore to find a copy. And as a last resort, you can find it on Amazon. But it is a really fine book. It's compelling. It's good from beginning to end, I thought. You will want to go through it one more time. As with the best poetry, there are poems that merit reading and rereading. So I can say that the Stan poems is really good. And Linda Ravenswood, of course, is a wonderfully accomplished poet, and we can see it in this book. So that is my review for today. And pick it up when you can.
And thanks again for that great review, Richard. And I believe maybe possibly Friday, once I figure out my work schedule, we'll be having John Dorsey and another runner. And coming up, we got Breonna Muniz. We got Linda Ravenswood eventually going to be interviewed. And once again, thank you for listening to Poet Runner. And please keep listening. Thank you very much.